"Tell me again why we're doing this?" Spencer asked, as he allowed Ryan to tug him down the street. He didn't mind as much as he let on, but if he didn't put up some kind of fight, Ryan would keep finding reasons to try manhandling him places. Try being the key word. Spencer himself wasn't all that big, but Ryan was pretty much skin and bones, no matter how much food Spencer's mom forced down his throat. "Because we haven't done anything fun in ages," Ryan said, not bothering to look back as he continued to pull Spencer along the sidewalk. He shoved his way through a loud group of girls, leaving Spencer to decide whether or not they deserved an apology. They didn't. "We played Scrabble with my grandmother," Spencer said innocently. "Are you saying that wasn't fun?" "It would have been if you'd let me spell fisting," Ryan complained. "But then we'd be at the hospital waiting for news about Grandma's heart attack," Spencer pointed out. "And that's fun for no one." "I don't know," Ryan mused. "There might have been some interesting magazines." "From 1985, Spencer said. "Fine," Ryan sighed. "No more dirty Scrabble." "That's all I ask," Spencer said solemnly. Ryan laughed and slowed his pace so that he was walking alongside Spencer instead of in front of him. His grip on Spencer's wrist loosened until, convinced that Spencer wasn't going to make a break for it, he let go. The backs of their hands brushed against each other as they walked, and it felt so normal, so much like old times, that Spencer's chest hurt at the thought of it. No one spoke for a while as they made their way down the street. Spencer wasn't entirely convinced that Ryan had a specific destination in mind, but for the moment he was content enough to wander the streets with him. How long had it been since they'd just killed time together? Spencer wasn't sure. Before he'd lost his memory, certainly. Probably even before that time Ryan had suddenly made himself scarce. Spencer looked over at his friend, studying his profile. "What are you staring at?" Ryan asked. He looked uncomfortable. Spencer could sympathize. Neither one of them particularly liked being scrutinized. "Nothing," Spencer said. Ryan led him into a music store where they browsed the CDs for 20 minutes and made loud, snide remarks about how the DVDs took up almost 3/4 of the floor space. After they were asked to leave, they visited a bookstore, and even though he claimed that his love of reading was forever tainted by creepy regulars with shitty taste in books, Ryan left with 2 paperbacks. They were back on the sidewalk, laughing at some kid with stupid hair and mismatched shoes, when all of a sudden, Ryan's laughter died away. "What's wrong?" Spencer asked. "Nothing," Ryan said through clenched teeth. His hand was back on Spencer's wrist, holding tightly enough that Spencer worried there would be bruises later. "No, seriously." Spencer looked around, twisting his neck in an effort to see what had upset Ryan so much. He couldn't see anyone they knew, or anyone who looked even remotely threatening. He was about to turn back around when he caught sight of pinstripes in his peripheral vision. There was someone across the street, walking just behind them, whose pace was matched pretty evenly with theirs. He wore a well-tailored suit and a black hat with a red band. The clothes were so out of place, and yet so familiar, so right. His movements were graceful, fluid as Spencer knew his would never be. His hands clenched tightly as he fought the feeling of so much skin, such defined muscles moving beneath his palms. Spencer's eyes dropped to the stranger's hand, taking in the long, elegant fingers. One of Spencer's hands unclenched, his own fingers brushing against his arm, chasing a half-remembered sensation of fingertips against his skin. "Come on," Ryan said, pulling insistently on Spencer's arm. Spencer threw his weight back, resisting the forward momentum as Ryan put all his strength into dragging Spencer toward the nearest building. A Starbucks on the corner. Ryan, Spencer began, craning his neck to keep the man in his line of sight. He was laughing now, his smile bright and beautiful as he watched them.
No, I'm thirsty, Ryan said. Very, very thirsty.
You're fucking hurting me, Spencer snapped.
Not as much as he will, Ryan muttered.
What was that? Spencer asked sharply, twisting his wrist against Ryan's fingers.
I said I'll buy you a coffee, Ryan replied. And a muffin. Let's go, before someone takes that last table.
But Spencer tried to pull his arm away, but Ryan was determined, and he had long, long fingers that refused to let go.
I'm tired. I need to sit down, Ryan added.
He continued to pull until Spencer found himself holding on to the glass door with his free hand.
You're making a scene,
Ryan hissed with another tug. Spencer's hand slipped off the door, and he stumbled into Ryan's side.
You're crazy, Spencer exclaimed.
Crazy for coffee. Now let's go, Ryan said cheerfully. Spencer allowed himself to follow, but he kept staring over his shoulder. Soon enough, the well-dressed man crossed the street, coming toward them. He caught Spencer's eye and smiled at him, amusement written all over his face. He winked and continued down the sidewalk.
That's it, keep walking, Ryan muttered.
What? Spencer demanded. Do you want chocolate sprinkles? Ryan asked, holding up the chocolate shaker.
Dude, no,
Spencer said with a face. Just black coffee, nothing else.
You're so boring, Ryan said,
before starting up another conversation, as if he hadn't momentarily been possessed by a crazy person. Spencer watched him closely, chiming in whenever he was expected to, but mostly not paying attention to what Ryan was saying.
What the hell had just happened?
Spencer had no clue, but he was pretty sure he knew where he could find out. It was easy to keep an eye on him, to observe without being seen. All of Spencer's time for the next two evenings was spoken for, either by his parents or his best friend. Ryan, in particular, kept an eagle eye on him, going so far as to insinuate himself into Smith family activities, so that Spencer had hardly a moment to himself. Beckett supposed it was his own fault. He'd made a spectacle of himself that night on the sidewalk, but who could blame him when things had so fortuitously come together? He'd set out with the intention of shadowing Ryan, only to find him with John's little human. Beckett had seen him once or twice before crossing paths with him at the bridge, but he'd never had much cause to pay attention to him. Spencer Smith had simply been Ryan's human friend, and, consequently, was of little use to Beckett beyond the possibility of a meal. Or perhaps as collateral, if he ever truly became angry with the little seer and his pet vampire. All of that changed in an instant, circumstances lending Spencer value he'd never have otherwise. Unremarkable boys with unremarkable lives had never carried much interest for Beckett. But he'd be the first to admit that the fastest way to get his attention was to hide something from him. How long had it gone on before he'd found out? John had spent the last year with Maya, and the boy was young, though that didn't mean much when it came to vampires. Beckett himself had no taste for youngsters, had gone so far as to forbid it from his city. But there were vampires in other areas who often fed on children. But this was different. Beckett was sure of it. The human had no marks on his neck or wrists, and if John had seen him as food, Beckett was confident that Spencer would have been dead shortly after crossing the vampire's path. That meant there was more to it.
Even with the promise of eternity, vampires weren't eager to waste their time. If the boy merited such close attention, such secrecy and duplicity, there had to be an emotional attachment. It must have been recent then, after John had returned home and after Beckett had given the order to drop all other interests. The stupidity alone was shocking, but it was the arrogance of the lies that truly bothered him. Such behavior had to be nipped in the bud. Lessons would have to be taught, the status quo restored, and Beckett was rather excited to get started. Gerard's recent visit had thrown much of the dandy structure into chaos, and it was time to set it all to rights, starting with those whose loyalties seemed to be shifting. That the game was so interesting did wonders for Beckett's mood. He'd overheard enough conversations in the last few days to realize that the boy was suffering from amnesia. The huge gap in his memories spoke volumes. John Walker had been there, and he'd done a shitty job of disguising it. Something had spooked him, turning such a beautiful art form into nothing more than a smash and grab. The only thing it could be was Gerard. The realization made fury twist Beckett's features into something dark and dangerous. John had spoken to Gerard then, and there was no telling what exactly might have been said. The expression of rage drained away as he heard the sound of a bedroom window being opened. He watched as Spencer sat on the sill, legs hanging outside. Beckett smiled, stepping back into the shadows before turning and hurrying away. He knew exactly where the boy was going, and he couldn't help but congratulate himself for having ensured that they'd have an uninterrupted meeting. John was no doubt unhappy about watching the fledglings, but it was certainly not the worst of the tasks Beckett could have assigned him. There was no difficulty getting to the bridge before Spencer did. Beckett was leaning against one of the support pillars, hands in his pockets and hat pulled low over his eyes. He could hear the boy long before he could see him, the soft, shuffling sound of his running shoes on the gravel announcing his arrival.
"You're here."
Spencer's voice was surprised, as though he hadn't allowed himself to hope his plan would be successful. "I knew you'd come back eventually," Beckett said, a sweet, disarming smile on his face. The expression did its job. He could see some small measure of tension disappear from the boy's shoulders, though the wary look didn't leave his eyes entirely. He was obviously lost in some internal debate, not quite sure what the right course of action was. Beckett waited patiently until Spencer finally came a little closer, his head tilted to the side as he took in the vampire's appearance.
"So," he began. "I know you then."
"Oh, Spencer, of course you do," Beckett said, putting an air of sadness into the words.
I don't remember you, though,"
Spencer said, shaking his head in frustration. His hand came up, and though he tried to disguise the action by tugging on his hair, Beckett could see the way the boy pressed his palm against the side of his head, almost as though he was trying to soothe away a headache. "No, you don't," Beckett said, taking one small, slow step forward. His movements were measured, not wanting to spook Spencer into running. He'd easily be able to catch him if he did, but that wasn't the kind of lesson he wanted John to learn, though it would do if there were no other alternatives. "I'm very sorry about that, too."
"Sorry?"
Spencer asked, suspicion coloring his tone. He was not a very trusting person under the best circumstances, and no doubt this current situation was making him even less so. Beckett took in the anger that was beginning to simmer just below the surface, and couldn't help but think of how very wrong he'd been about Spencer Smith. Maybe he wasn't so unremarkable after all. When everything was over, Beckett would have to consider sending John Walker a thank you card. "Yes, sorry," Beckett said, taking one more step forward, but taking care to stay just out of reach. "I had no choice but to do it. I just didn't count on being so upset about it."
"Doing what?" Spencer demanded.
It was clear that he wanted to hear the words. Whether it was a way of making Beckett take responsibility, or simply to ensure that he wasn't jumping to conclusions, Beckett wasn't sure. He did, however, admire the challenging set to Spencer's jaw, and the way his hands were fisted in the front pocket of his hooded sweatshirt, even if the shirt itself was hideous. He had him now, Beckett knew, had the boy's attention and his interest. Spencer would believe him. Beckett was sure of it. There was a tiny flicker of something in his eyes, hidden beneath the false bravado. He was tired, so very tired, and the only thing he wanted was the truth. Beckett would give that to him, win him over. Truth was truth, even if it was John's and not his own. He smiled reassuringly at Spencer, and took one more deliberate step forward, putting himself within arm's reach as a way to establish a feeling of trust between them. Though Spencer still looked wary, Beckett could see him mulling it over in his head, trying to decide how much he should accept from a virtual stranger. It would be easy, really, to reel him in. All he had to do was strike that fine balance between truthfulness and fantasy. "I had to take your memories, Spencer. It was the only way to keep you safe," Beckett said, his voice soft and apologetic.
"You're crazy," Spencer said, shaking his head.
He took a step back, but Beckett stepped forward, not allowing the boy to put any more distance between them. He reached for Spencer then, moving faster than the human could possibly see, wrapping long, cool fingers around his hand and not letting go. "No, I'm not. You know this," Beckett urged. "All the strange things that have been happening around you. How could you not believe me?"
"What did you do to me?" Spencer asked,
his voice barely above a whisper as he stared from Beckett's hand to his own arm. Beckett saw Spencer's other hand twitch a little, almost as though he was forcing it to stay at his side. Beckett supposed he was. In the last 2 days, he'd rarely seen the boy when he wasn't rubbing at his arm, flitting fingers across the back of his neck, or pressing them against his lips. "I saved you," Beckett replied, rubbing at Spencer's arm with his free hand. He kept the pressure light, much the way he'd seen Spencer do earlier that evening, as he stood at his darkened bedroom window. "It was too dangerous for you to be walking around knowing the things you did."
"What did I know?"
Spencer's teeth sunk into his bottom lip, and his brow furrowed a little as he tried to make sense of the situation.
He was still thinking far too much for Beckett's liking. So he raised Spencer's captive hand to his mouth. "Who I am. What I am," he said, before pressing the tip of Spencer's index finger into his mouth, up against one of his fangs. He watched as Spencer's eyes grew comically wide and tried to pull away. Beckett refused to let go, though he did loosen his grasp a little when he saw that the boy was about to panic. He began to speak again, keeping his voice low, light, imploring, as he worked to keep the boy caught up in the cadence of the words, not giving him time to be afraid. "There are those who would take you from me," he People who would love to get revenge by using you against me. You see, Spencer, I'm a very dangerous man.
Dangerous to me?
Spencer asked, swallowing hard.
You don't know the half of it,
Beckett said with a smile.
I wanted to keep you, wanted so much, but I couldn't risk you that way.
I can... Spencer trailed off, trying to find the best words. He gave up after a moment.
I can feel you, he said,
a slight blush coloring his cheeks as he ducked his head. Beckett agreed.
Yes, you like to be touched.
He slowly let go of Spencer's fingers, settling his hands at his waist instead. He pulled the boy forward against him, taking a moment to enjoy the feel of Spencer's racing heart against his chest. The boy was rigid in his arms, and even though he slowly brought his own arms up to wrap around Beckett's back, the vampire could still feel the way Spencer petted at his forearm. Beckett's hands chased the tension from the boy's muscles, his fingers digging into the knots, soothing spots that he knew must be positively aching. It wasn't long before Spencer melted against him, breathing deeply, sometimes moaning softly whenever Beckett found a particularly nice spot to put his hands. They stayed like that for several long moments, and a voice in Beckett's mind sang with satisfaction. It was short-lived.
No, stop!
Spencer protested. He pushed back, hands on Beckett's chest, and though the vampire was unhappy to let him go, he finally took a half-step backward as a show of good faith. Spencer's face was furious, his anger a nearly palpable thing that Beckett wished he could feel, much the way Nate could, thanks to his newfound talent.
How could you do that to me?
Spencer demanded.
You took 2 weeks of my life!
Well, Beckett thought, that answers that question.
You did that and then, what, figured I'd be able to handle it? I was fucking terrified. I woke up the next morning and didn't know what happened.
Spencer took a step back, and Beckett allowed it, though he didn't think he'd be all that happy if the human tried to move any farther away.
You weren't supposed to,
Beckett pointed out. He sighed.
If I'd done it correctly, you wouldn't have even noticed that I was missing from your memories. Yeah, well, I think we've already established the shit job you did with that,
Spencer hissed. Beckett had to fight to keep a smile off his face. He was a tiny, fragile human, actually daring to scold him. On any other day, in any other circumstance, Beckett would have been making plans to visit the whelp's cemetery plot. But at the moment, heaven help him. Beckett almost found it endearing. He couldn't help but wonder how much of Spencer's disposition would survive the change.
He was on your doorstep, Spencer,
Beckett said.
He was going to slaughter your family.
What? Spencer asked, stopping mid-tirade and looking at Beckett with wide eyes.
That's why I had to act so quickly,
the vampire continued. His name is John Walker, and he's taken a shine to your pretty blue eyes. Don't you see? I just wanted to keep you safe. Your family, too.
But what did I do to him? Why would he want to hurt me?
Spencer asked. So naive, Beckett thought. That particular trait will have to be dealt with eventually.
Because someone lied to him,
Beckett said, pulling Spencer back against his body. He was happily surprised when the boy let him,
going so far as to wrap his arms around Beckett's waist.
You should never lie to him. That can only end badly for everyone.
I think I want to go home,
Spencer said, his voice muffled by the side of Beckett's neck where he'd hidden his face. Beckett ran his hand down the boy's back in what was meant to be a reassuring gesture, but he only tensed up more. Come along, then, the vampire said, pulling away and taking Spencer's hand. I imagine you're exhausted from just trying to make sense of all this. I'll be waiting for you tomorrow. We can talk more. Ask me any questions you'd like. Beckett couldn't promise to answer them truthfully, but Spencer didn't have to know that. He led the boy back to his house, waiting in the backyard as Spencer tried to figure out the best way to say goodnight to a vampire. Beckett would have drawn the moment out, let him continue to stand there, awkward and confused. But he really did have other things to see to. He leaned in quickly, brushing a kiss against the boy's mouth, before physically turning him around and pushing him toward the trellis. If you don't go now, someone will wake up, he urged. I'm sure you don't want to explain why we're standing here.
God, no,
Spencer said, beginning to climb. He looked down at Beckett as he reached his windowsill and stared at him.
Am I completely insane? He asked.
Beckett laughed and shook his head. He reached into his inside breast pocket and pulled out an elegant little switchblade. He'd taken it off a hunter back in the 50s, and he was rarely without it. He couldn't help if he loved trophies, and the family name etched into the handle was large enough, displayed prominently enough, that it was recognizable to whoever saw it. The Flowers family was still hunting, and it was so easy to antagonize them. If you're crazy, he said, setting to work carving his initials in the trellis. Then this won't be here in the morning. Go to sleep, Spencer. You look like you need it. The boy regarded him for a moment before pulling himself into his bedroom. He didn't come back to look outside. Beckett didn't know if he should be glad or not. His name was William, and he was a dandy. Vampires were everywhere in the city, and Spencer was quickly treated to a crash course in how to spot them. William took him to one of the over-21 clubs downtown, set him up against the balcony railing, and stepped into his space as he pointed them out one by one. The punks with their leather, the hoods and their baggy clothes, and finally the dandies and their fine dress. It was a uniform of sorts, a source of pride and recognition. Recognition. Spencer couldn't help but think of Brendan at that point, at the way he'd teased Ryan, smiled at him and looked at him with a fondness that surprised him, now that he knew what Brendan really was. William watched Spencer with interest. A lot of interest, if Spencer was being truthful. But nothing like that warm expression Spencer had seen from Brendan in the park. Did Ryan know what he was? Should Spencer tell him? How the hell would that conversation go, anyway? Have you seen your boyfriend in the sunlight, Ryan?
No.
Well, it turns out that there's a very good reason why. Not that Spencer was supposed to actually know about Ryan's boyfriend. Ryan certainly hadn't gone out of his way to explain, or to even introduce Brendan as anything particularly important. It stung to think that Ryan wouldn't trust him with that kind of information. But Spencer kept telling himself that he had no room for hurt feelings. He hadn't exactly told anyone about William either, it seemed. Though He and William didn't have anywhere near the familiarity that Ryan and Brendan appeared to have. That bothered Spencer more than he wanted to admit. For 3 weeks now, ever since waking up that strange morning with a hole in his mind, he'd been feeling phantom hands on his body, sweet touches and gentle caresses that saw his own hands chasing after them. He had no idea where they'd come from, their context or significance, but he knew they were somehow related to that chunk of missing time. He'd hoped that meeting William again would have satisfied the need for physical touch, but it had done the exact opposite. William wasn't touching him the right way. The thought was ridiculous. How could there be a right way or a wrong way so long as his hands were in the same places, were petting across his skin with slow, sweet friction? Spencer tried to tell himself that he was mistaken, but he couldn't banish the tiny seed of doubt that grew just a little bit more every time William pulled him close, tipped his face up, or snuck his fingers under the hem of Spencer's t-shirt. He took it all silently, leaning into it when it was expected of him, kissing back when he had to, and stayed glued to William's side when he took Spencer around the city. William showed him off a lot, never passing up an opportunity to take him somewhere. They quickly developed a routine over the next week. Spencer would shrug off his family's attentions and dodge Ryan's phone calls or visits. He'd climb out his window as soon as he could slip away, and William would be waiting not far from the house. By the time Spencer got down to the ground, he was usually there, ready to help him from the trellis, even though he was more than capable of doing it himself. His hands wandered a little then, his smile wicked as he leaned in for a kiss. He'd take Spencer somewhere to change, make him presentable, he called it, before they'd go out. Spencer would be put on display in his finely tailored suit, the little human who was meant to be talked about instead of to. He bit back the questions that sprang to mind, most of them about the vampire William had warned him about. If this John Walker was such a danger, if he was the reason William had stolen Spencer's memories and left him alone for weeks afterward, why was Spencer being tarted up and dragged around the city? Wasn't drawing so much attention to himself a bad idea? It was common sense. There was hiding in plain sight, and then there was holding up a neon sign. He didn't say any of this to William. Not when Spencer had seen the way William treated some of the other vampires. The fury in his eyes? It scared Spencer enough that he spent the next evening glued to his mother's side, being a dutiful son by helping with chores and watching lame family-friendly movies on NBC. She was delighted. Spencer was terrified. He didn't go home after school the next day. He had an uneventful shift at work, stocking shelves at the grocery store and helping elderly customers carry their purchases to their cars. He hid out in the back room whenever he could get away with it, staring at his math textbook in an attempt to learn just enough to pass his test in the morning. After clocking out, he settled his backpack on his shoulders and headed downtown, to a small restaurant that he and Ryan would visit on occasion. It was close to the bookshop where Ryan worked, and if Spencer was hoping to catch Ryan walking home, he did his best to be quiet about that particular desire. There was no guarantee that Ryan would be alone, and the last thing Spencer wanted was to cross paths with another vampire. He still hadn't come to a decision on what to do about Brendan, though the fact that he'd done a pretty good job of ignoring Ryan outside of class definitely had something to do with that. He could hardly start a discussion about vampires at school. Well, he could, but then he and Ryan would end up banished to the table with all the weirdos at lunch, and he had too much self-respect to spend his last few weeks of high school lumped in with that group. It was a lame excuse, and he knew it. What kind of friend kept that kind of knowledge to himself, anyway? Fuck feeling like an idiot. Fuck hurt feelings. Spencer had to do something, sooner rather than later. He just had to figure out how. Maybe something would miraculously come to him while he grabbed something to eat. And if Ryan happened to walk by, that might help too. He pushed open the door to the restaurant and smiled at the waitress as she walked past him, carrying a heavy tray of soft drinks. He headed for an empty table at the back and pulled out his math book again, carefully writing out the equations as he waited to be served. He was midway through his second when the waitress finally got to him, a menu in one hand and an order pad in the other. Spencer waved away the menu and ordered a plate of fries and a Coke. The waitress scribbled it down and headed for the kitchen. Spencer continued to work on his math until his order was up. Then he shoved his books back into his bag before attacking his food. He looked up now and then, hoping to catch sight of Ryan on his way home. But on the whole, his attention was glued to his plate. He hadn't realized just how hungry he'd been until he smelled the fries, crispy and salty just the way he liked them. He couldn't even remember the last time he and Ryan had split a plate and bitched about insignificant things such as school or work. Spencer was lost in thought, toying with a fry and drawing figure eights in the ketchup. So he didn't notice the vampire until he dropped into the chair across from him. Spencer jumped a little, and William smiled at him, eyes laughing. He leaned forward in his seat, careful to avoid touching the tabletop with his expensive clothes. Spencer guessed that a human's idea of clean didn't quite match his own. "I missed you last night," William said softly. Even though his words were meant to put Spencer at ease, the boy couldn't help but look back at him warily. His body was stiff, and his heart was pounding, no doubt giving away his discomfort. He took deep, careful breaths in an effort to calm himself down, and was frustrated when it didn't work. He didn't want to show how worried he was, but Spencer wasn't an idiot. He knew that standing William up not once but twice had been a monumentally bad idea. That didn't mean he hadn't felt safer when he'd done it, though. "I had to stay home last night," Spencer replied. It was a lie, and a very bad one at that. He'd already shown that he had no trouble sneaking out of the house if he wanted to, but he'd drawn a blank when it came to other excuses. He hoped that William would take it to mean he'd needed to get some actual sleep, but it didn't look like that would be the case. His expression went momentarily dark before he schooled his features into something almost like understanding. Spencer might have fallen for it once, before he'd seen the dark, dangerous looks he'd thrown toward his underlings. William was a man accustomed to getting what he wanted, when he wanted it. He didn't take kindly to those who didn't cooperate. "I'm a very dangerous man." "To me?" "You don't know the half of it." A shiver raced down Spencer's spine as he replayed that part of their conversation. Had he really been so relieved to find his answers that those particular words had slipped right past him? So many meanings, and he'd overlooked all except the easy ones. "You're here now," William said, coming around the table with a small smile. His hand played over Spencer's hair, toying with the strands and tugging gently. Spencer ducked his head and mumbled something under his breath, unable to stop himself.
"What was that?"
William asked sharply. It's not the same, a voice in Spencer's head repeated. You don't feel the same.
Nothing, Spencer said instead. He wasn't stupid enough to think William believed him.
The vampire tugged Spencer out of his seat, pulling him against his body before tipping his face up. Spencer knew what was coming. He wanted to turn his face away, to stop the kiss, but that momentary flash of anger on the vampire's face was still fresh in his memory. He allowed it, trying all the while to quiet the voice in his head that kept yelling about all the things William was doing wrong. He didn't respond when William's tongue touched his lip, and the vampire pulled back soon enough.
Let's go, William said, tugging on Spencer's hand. He allowed himself to be pulled toward the front entrance, dragging his feet as much as he felt was safe. They were almost at the doorway when movement in Spencer's peripheral vision caught his attention. He craned his neck to look and found his eyes locked with those of another vampire as he crossed the main dining area, stopping at a table near the window. He was impeccably dressed in a black suit, a pinstripe waistcoat showing under his open jacket. His hat was pulled down low over his eyes, but he pushed the brim back when Spencer looked at him. Spencer stopped walking and stared openly, ignoring the manners painstakingly instilled by his mother. That man, vampire, he corrected, was so familiar. His face, his eyes, the way that he walked. Spencer tried to place him, to slot him into some kind of memory, but he came up empty after a few moments. There was simply nowhere to put him. The realization made him dig his heels in, pull back against William's insistent tugs on his arm. The other vampire watched impassively from his table, and Spencer knew, just knew, that even though his expression was calm and controlled, he was no doubt upset. This had to be the vampire William told him about. John Walker. Spencer watched him with wide eyes, taking in the way he kept his gaze trained on William's hand on Spencer's arm. Come along, Spencer, William said, pulling sharply enough that Spencer stumbled. William had obviously noticed the other vampire, if his daring, smug expression was anything to go by. William pulled Spencer up against his side and led him out the door, one hand pressed low on the small of Spencer's back, fingertips dipping below the waistband of his jeans. Spencer tried to stop his forward momentum, to pull away, but William only tightened his grip, fingers like iron bands around Spencer's upper arm. As he was led away, Spencer craned his neck, once again making eye contact with the vampire in the restaurant. His calm expression had bled away. The fury in his eyes scared Spencer more than William's had. Spencer was beyond grateful to finally see his family's little house again. It was shortly after 4 in the morning, the latest he'd ever stayed out with William, and every muscle in Spencer's body was crying out for sleep. He stumbled out of the car, allowing the vampire to steady him with a hand to his elbow, and waved sleepily over his shoulder. It would be rude not to, and he'd already pushed his luck enough for one night. He knew he'd never forget the way William all but manhandled him all night, one hand on his wrist to pull Spencer sharply back, if he so much as wandered a few inches away from his side. There would be bruises later, if they hadn't already started to darken his skin. Spencer was too tired to push up the sleeves of his jacket to check.
Climbing the trellis in his fancy clothes wasn't all that easy, and Spencer was beginning to see why William usually made him change before taking him home. His trousers caught on every splinter, every exposed nail, and his shirt cuffs were filthy by the time he reached the top. For a moment, he worried about what the vampire would say when he saw the state of the expensive suit, but he pushed the thought away. It was far too late to worry about it now, and if William had wanted the clothing kept pristine, he wouldn't have sent Spencer home in it. Spencer took a deep breath, tried to gather his strength, and pulled himself onto the windowsill. In his exhaustion, he fell right through the window, hitting the floor face first. He stayed on the carpet for several long minutes, straining his hearing to see if he'd woken anyone up with the racket he'd made. Spencer could hear his father snoring and his mother's uneasy murmurs, but nothing overly alarming. He sat up slowly, taking stock of his minor aches and pains, and glancing over at the clock on his desk. He was staring at the red digital numbers, 4:16, when he noticed a shadow that didn't belong. Spencer froze, trying to decide how much he wanted to know what was about to happen. Would it be best to have it be a surprise, or to know exactly what to expect? In the end, his need to know won out. He forced himself to take deep, even breaths, and slowly turned around. It was the vampire from the restaurant, the one William had taunted with his smile. He was sitting on the edge of Spencer's bed, his hat beside him on the covers, looking incredibly out of place in the middle of a messy teenager's bedroom. "Your clothes are filthy," he said, a small half-smile quirking his lips. "Thought I'd get some gardening done," Spencer replied, looking down at his dirty cuffs again. "There's no excuse not to be fashionable." His heart was pounding, but something, instinct, told him to just keep the vampire talking. He couldn't bite if he was talking. "No," the vampire agreed, "but this shouldn't be your fashion." He stood up then and took a few slow, measured steps forward. Spencer stood his ground, trying to ignore the way his heart was pounding in his chest, certain that it was visible through his shirt like some kind of ridiculous cartoon. "You're John Walker," Spencer said, as the vampire came closer. "William warned me about you." "Did he now?" John asked, his mouth twisting a little. "What kindness on William's part." "What exactly did he tell you about me? No, wait, let me guess. He had to hide you from me, didn't he? It was the only way to keep you safe, to ensure that no one stole you away. Is that close enough?" Spencer shrugged in a non-committal manner. But John wasn't all that far off in his guess. "Do you really believe that, Spencer?" John asked. He closed the distance between them, and Spencer just wasn't comfortable with the look on the vampire's face. It was too intense. It made Spencer want to step away to put more space between them. He did his best to hide his fear, his fisted hands the only outward sign of his discomfort. "Did you manage to ignore your instincts, your better judgment, and fall for his lies? You are so incredibly smart, you know. It's part of what makes you so attractive, that your brain is always working, puzzling out the things around you." John's voice was low, encouraging as he continued to speak. It was a deliberate act. Spencer knew it. but he couldn't help the way the tension in his muscles slowly started to dissolve. I heard you at the restaurant tonight. So did William, for that matter. It's not the same, you said. Your body remembers what your brain doesn't, and you're smart enough to listen to it. Sometimes that's what you need to save yourself. It's a shame that you had to develop that sense of self-preservation, but it's an asset, something to celebrate. John took one final step toward Spencer, and then they were standing mere inches apart. John's eyes were brown, Spencer saw, deep and dark and beautiful. There was something about his eyes, Spencer thought. Something he should remember about those eyes. What is that voice telling you right now? John asked softly. He reached out, trailing his fingertips down the back of Spencer's arm, light and barely there. Spencer's breath hissed in, and he saw John smile as he repeated the action. Harder this time, fingers pressing down in just the right way. It sent shivers down Spencer's spine, made his eyes fall closed as he gasped. God, that was it, what he'd been feeling for so long. Strong fingers on his arm, and there, at the back of his neck, digging into the last of the tension, chasing it away. Spencer swayed on his feet, his breath catching in his throat as he felt those hands on his face, tilting it up for a kiss. He opened to John immediately, his arms coming up around the vampire's neck as he melted against him. He was warm and solid, and he felt so very good pressed up against Spencer's body. Come with me, John said, after he pulled away, his eyes still on Spencer's mouth. Spencer looked at his bottom lip a little nervously. Come with me and I can explain everything. We can't do it here. Okay, Spencer said softly, and then a little louder, with more confidence. Okay.